Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. On this show, we look at the darker side of business, politics, sports, and society to better understand the forces behind corruption and deceit in our country. What exactly drives someone to break the rules, and what happens when they get caught? Scandals have shaped America since its founding, and we're confronted with new ones every day. So from time to time, we want to take a break from our deep dives into the scandals of the past to explore today's biggest outrages. That's what we're doing today. We've got a special interview with a reporter who's been following one of the most controversial figures of 2018 and 2019.
My client took this polygraph test in May of 2011, May 19th, 2011. She was asked specific questions. She passed with flying colors, as the polygraph report that we produced shows.
Michael Avenatti is a lawyer turned celebrity who represented Stephanie Clifford, or Stormy Daniels, in her legal dispute with President Trump and Michael Cohen in 2018. Daniels, an adult film star, alleged Trump and his team paid her $130,000 in hush money to keep silent about an affair she said she had with Trump back in 2006. She hired Avenatti to get out of her non-disclosure agreement, one that she says was invalid because Trump never signed it.
Where is this guy? Why won't he come why won't he come and sit
because
in this
obviously,
chair? Wait a minute, let me finish.
There's
me finish.
Other, I'll,
no,
no,
me
I want to answer that question.
Let me finish, because he's been invited numerous times.
Okay.
He won't come on the show.
So
he's dodging the question.
He is not dodging the question.
He has to hide behind
other,
you. Where is this guy?
Where is this guy?
Avenatti took his case to the court of public opinion and became a fixture on cable television news throughout 2018. He railed against President Trump, Michael Cohen, and their lawyers, and became something of a folk hero to many who opposed the president.
I believe that our party, the Democratic Party, must be a party that fights fire with fire.
Avenatti even announced plans to run for president in 2020 as a Democrat. But just as his star was rising, reports about his past started to come out. Bankruptcies, tax evasion, fraud, and a new charge, attempting to extort Nike. Just last week, Avenatti was indicted on 36 counts by a federal grand jury in California, a host of tax offenses, concealment of funds, and embezzlement of client money. His is a remarkable saga of a man who has chased scandal his entire career, but now finds himself at the center of his own. We speak today with Michael Finnegan, a political reporter for the LA Times. He's been covering Avenatti for the past year and a half. He joined me from the LA Times studios. Here's our conversation. American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals, ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Michael Finnegan, thanks for coming on American Scandal.
Thank you for having me.
Now, attorney Michael Avenatti, he has some history, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But for most of us, we've only ever heard of him recently. He's a lawyer representing adult film star Stormy Daniels in her case against President Trump. So let's start the story when he first comes on the scene in 2018. Can you set the stage and tell us what happened?
Sure. Stormy Daniels was not somebody that Michael Avenatti knew. He was a plaintiff's lawyer in Newport Beach. He'd done a couple high-profile cases, but was not well-known at all. And when she went public with a lawsuit to get out of her non-disclosure agreement with President Trump over an alleged affair that they had back in 2006, Michael Avenatti kind of burst onto the public scene as a constant presence on cable television, talking about the case. He was sort of thrust out of nowhere into the biggest scandal in the country. And he had kind of a natural way with the media, was kind of a strong presence for cable, especially with the kind of conflict that they like. He's a very pugnacious person. And what most people didn't know at that time was that Michael Avenatti was a character with all kinds of problems in his past that were catching up to him in a very big way. And of course, a year later would result in his arrest.
Can you recap for us the specifics of the Stormy Daniels suit?
Well, Stormy Daniels sued the president to get a non-disclosure agreement nullified. She had accepted a $130,000 payment just before the 2016 presidential election in return for keeping quiet about her alleged affair with the president. And the president's lawyers were threatening privately to go after her for millions of dollars in penalties for violating the agreement by talking about her past with President Trump publicly. She had started to hint in television appearances about it. She was doing a tour of strip clubs around the country called the Make America Horny Again Tour. So that was a huge story, of course, when it broke, and Michael Avenatti became, he kind of thrust himself right into the middle of it. He ultimately, of course, lost that lawsuit, and as the scandal unfolded, filed a second lawsuit on behalf of Stormy Daniels, alleging that the president had defamed her at one point, and lost that one too, and wound up, that resulted in a court order that Stormy Daniels pay the president's legal fees, nearly $300,000, which ironically is more than double what the original hush money payment that she received was. So it hasn't turned out well for either Avenatti or Stormy Daniels.
You mentioned that Avenatti did not know Daniels and the other way around. How did he come to represent her?
That's a secret. People do not know. Avenatti and Stormy Daniels have not said publicly how they met, so we do not know.
Avenatti has a lot of other secrets, too, and as you mentioned, they're catching up with him. Let's go back a little further before 2018. What sort of lawyer was Avenatti before he became a figure in the public's awareness?
Avenatti was a plaintiff's lawyer. It's kind of this boom and bust business where you work on contingency. You know, you take on a lot of risk by suing a big corporation for wrongdoing in hopes of getting a huge verdict or settlement payment. And occasionally he did, which is why he was able to live very, very well for a period. And that was the essence of his business before this happened.
And was he successful as a plaintiff's lawyer?
He was a successful plaintiff's lawyer, but to me, the fascinating thing about Avenatti is that when all of a sudden he's a very high-profile attorney in this Stormy Daniels case, he knows that he has a past of financial troubles and legal disputes that could put him in very, very serious jeopardy, and ultimately did. And the big question is why somebody who knows that they have all this trouble that could come to light would take such a high profile in a big scandal like this.
Well, let's talk about his troubles then in specific, because he did win some very big cases. So, I mean, millions, tens of millions of dollars. How did he find himself now so low that he's accused of tax evasion and embezzlement?
Well, part of it started in about 2009, 2010, when he was not paying his personal income taxes. And that ultimately came to light years later when the IRS put a personal lien on him for almost $1 million. And what we now know, according to the IRS, is that since 2010, he has filed no personal income tax returns at all, even though he has deposited, according to the IRS, about $18 million into his bank accounts. And he also had a private company that he owned. It's called Avenatti & Associates. And he did a lot of his business through that company. And since 2011 to 2017, that company deposited about $38 million into its bank accounts, according to the IRS, but also filed no tax returns. So those were the big issues. And then his other big tax problems were at a coffee company that he bought up in Washington State back in 2013 for $9 million. It operated the Tully's chain of coffee stores in the Northwest. And in that case, he was withholding payroll taxes from employee paychecks, but spending the money instead of sending it to the government, according to the IRS. And that's a very serious matter. And back around 2015, 2016, the IRS started looking at that and investigating what was going on. And it became a very big problem. And even after the Stormy Daniels story broke, some reporters asked him about it, and he blamed the payroll companies, right? But the IRS now, in these criminal charges that have been brought against Avenatti, says that it was exactly the opposite. He stopped using the payroll companies to process the paychecks and then started keeping all of the money that was supposed to be going to the government. And the IRS also says he was doing the same thing at his law firm, Egan Avenatti. Now, he hasn't been charged yet with a tax crime per se, but the legal papers that the IRS and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern California have filed make it clear that he's under investigation for tax evasion and bankruptcy fraud and a whole bunch of other crimes.
Well, this string of almost comic criminality and mismanagement seems to really cut against his public persona as a full-throated crusader for justice. How do you reconcile these two aspects of him?
Well, it's hard to reconcile these two aspects of him. He, you know, certainly grew up in a family with a modest income. He put himself through law school at night at George Washington University, and really kind of worked his way into a successful law practice. But the litigation that has surrounded him over the last decade or so has made clear that at least the way his adversaries see it, he cheats other lawyers. And even now the government is charging at least one of his own clients as a matter of course. So it is hard to reconcile the two sort of versions of Avenatti that you see.
Tax evasion is not his only crisis at the moment. He is also apparently alleged to have tried to extort Nike.
That's correct. That case, you could argue that this is what lawyers, aggressive lawyers, do in high-stakes business negotiations, but the government argues that it's full-scale extortion. The language that he used in dealing with Nike was extremely aggressive, and warned them that he was going to harm their reputation so badly that it would cost them billions of dollars and things like that. And in the government's view, that's extortion.
Well, let's go into the particulars of that case. What did he have on Nike? And how does it differ from an arrangement that, like, for instance, President Trump arranged with Stormy Daniels?
Well, he told Nike that he had a client who had evidence that Nike had been making improper payments to high school athletes and their families, and was going to have a press conference to expose that unless they paid the client $1 million and change, and hired him and fellow lawyer Mark Garagos of California, and paid them upwards of $20 million to do an investigation of this kind of thing inside Nike. And he warned the lawyers for Nike that he could damage the company tremendously if he went public, and told them that he would walk away if they would pay the money.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So what does Avenatti say about these tax and extortion charges?
Well, he's denies any wrongdoing, and he also has been attacking Nike for alleged wrongdoing. He's been notably quiet about the allegations in the California prosecution. He's charged in California with bank fraud and wire fraud. In one case, he's alleged to have submitted phony income tax returns to a bank in Mississippi in order to get more than $4 million in business loans. These were years when he wasn't actually filing income tax returns, according to the IRS, but submitted these phony returns in order to get the money. And then in the wire fraud case, he's alleged to have embezzled $1.6 million from a client. In that case, he had the money from a settlement wired to a bank account that he controlled, but the money was supposed to belong to the client, and he is alleged to have never told the client that the money had arrived and then spent it all.
I'm trying to understand what might have compelled him to raise his profile. I almost understand it. I mean, he has a history of big risk employment, you know, well, big risk opportunities. he lives on the edge, this gray area of legality anyways, takes some gambles all the way and sees Stormy Daniel as a big opportunity to raise his profile and then, of course, perhaps earn more and get bigger cases. But all the while, he knows that he's on a knife's edge, that this baggage, even if he's innocent of all of he's accused of, it's still very suspicious. And then he contemplates running for president himself in 2020.
It was quite extraordinary. And people who knew him, especially those who had fought him in court over the years, were astonished that he would get anywhere near a campaign for president of the United States. Setting aside whether he was qualified or not, people who were familiar with his litigation history and his courtroom history and his sort of scorched earth disputes with fellow lawyers and things like that were absolutely astonished that he was holding himself out there as a potential candidate for president. But, you know, in some corners of the Democratic Party, there was an appetite for a sort of Trump-like fighter to take on the president in the president's own style, you know, and it sort of, you know, pugnaciousness and nastiness, that it comes very naturally to Michael Avenatti. And so there was a little, there was a short period there where he was dead serious about pursuing a candidacy for president. He was in Iowa, New Hampshire, and going all over the country. He was a star speaker at party fundraisers. And when he was arrested on suspected domestic violence, that pretty much ended, not entirely, but it definitely slowed down his television appearances. Now, those, you know, prosecutors opted not to pursue that case. And he has continued, though, to appear on television once in a while, but much less than before. You know, he's sort of gravitated to some high-profile cases like the sexual abuse cases against R. Kelly and immigration cases involving immigrant families at the border. And of course, the case of a woman who made accusations against the Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh during his confirmation hearings.
I can guess the answer to this, but I want your opinion. When someone runs for office, it's hopefully to improve the country, but often to improve themselves. What was Avenatti trying to do there?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, knowing especially about his tax history. I don't know what would have led him to sort of run with this idea that he might succeed in politics. But for whatever reason, he ran with it.
Well, let's talk about your coverage of Avenatti. When did you first take him on as a subject?
Well, when the Stormy Daniels lawsuits began in March 2018, I started covering those, and I very quickly started hearing from adversaries of Avenatti over the years who thought that he was an interesting story, and started to look at it, and we decided, he's not high enough profile. It's not important enough. You know, his background. He's just a lawyer for Stormy Daniels, and she's the figure who's important in the scandal. But after just a few weeks, it became clear. No. He is an important figure who is worth looking at, and so the tax liens and the legal conflicts over his coffee company were part of the sort of early story of who is this guy and what's his background. And then it just started to get more interesting because he had some really nasty disputes with law partners. In 2007, he opened a law firm in Newport Beach called Egan, O'Malley, and Avenatti, and they won some big, high-profile cases. One was against SCI, the big cemetery company, and
the money really started rolling in. And when it started rolling in, he and one of the partners, John O'Malley, got into a nasty fight. But O'Malley wound up winning $2.7 million, saying that Avenatti had kind of kicked him out of the firm, you know, improperly. But then in 2015, there was another law partner by the name of Jason Frank, who left the firm with a couple other lawyers and made allegations that Avenatti had cheated him out of $10 or $15 million in pay that he was entitled to. And Frank turned out to be an unbelievably dogged person in chasing down that money. And he wound up after the law firm went into bankruptcy for a year. He wound up getting a $10 million judgment against the firm. And then he wound up getting a $5 million personal judgment against Avenatti. And this story of how Avenatti was sort of sinking in deeper and deeper financial troubles just became more and more interesting.
And of course, Avenatti is probably aware of your coverage of him.
You know, he is he's not a shy person at all. He's often described as an in-your-face kind of person, and he's that way with reporters too. He is very savvy about the media and the needs of television programs or newspapers, whatever it might be. And he works the system very effectively. He knows what a scoop is and offers scoops to reporters. And he, when he doesn't like a story or a line of questioning, can be extremely aggressive in pushing back. And so on a few occasions, Avenatti has confronted me personally and publicly in courtroom hallways, for instance, and attacked the, you're a disgrace to your profession, that kind of thing. And so that's never fun as a reporter. But you know, you have an obligation to sort of listen to what he has to say, and to the extent that he's raising legitimate concerns about accuracy or fairness or those kinds of things that should be addressed. That's what you do, and that's what we've done. It's not fun to have someone berate you in public, and that's something that it's not unique to me either. I've seen him call other people, and not necessarily even journalists, a disgrace to their professions too. So it's just his style can be a little difficult to deal with.
Do you ever feel like you're settling for your foundation? That is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, he's certainly on brand. His aggressiveness is perhaps the the one thing that we all know about him. And it's the thing that he hangs his hat on as well. He has claimed that the Stormy Daniels story would have been a two-day story were it not for him, that he himself was the one who brought the scandal to light and carried it forward in the media. What do you think he thinks his role is? Is he a lawyer or is he a publicist?
Well, you have to remember that the Stormy Daniels case did kind of create, and his high-profile role in that case did create a space for him to get high-profile clients and get a hearing in situations like the Nike situation. They'll take the meeting, you know, and so has this, you know, scandal provided him a potential boost to his legal career, you know, in one sense, yes. And he, you know, he deserves some credit for what he said early on in the scandal about what the president and Michael Cohen were up to with the hush money payment to his client, Stormy Daniels. I mean, yes, he lost the lawsuit, but in the scheme of things, when he was out there saying that Michael Cohen was going to be indicted and the president knew about all of this, you have to keep in mind that months later, that all proved to be true. You know, Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to two felonies. Well, one felony directly related to the hush money payment to Stormy Daniels, and federal prosecutors in New York did conclude and say publicly that the president directed that illegal hush money payment. So when he first sort of came out of the gate saying all of the seemingly outlandish things he was saying, well, a substantial portion of it was true. Now, the feds were already investigating Michael Cohen before he came on the scene, and they uncovered plenty of evidence, you know, through search warrants and whatnot that had nothing to do with Michael Avenatti, that led them down the path to this prosecution. But it, you know, wouldn't be fair to say he doesn't deserve any credit for what wound up happening.
Now, you've got a background reporting on corruption and scandal. You spent years at the New York Daily News before moving to the LA Times. I'm wondering, you know, when we think about scandal, when we tell stories of scandal, we often seek a moral to the story. Just naked outrage isn't satisfying to anyone. We want to understand what happened and that there might be comeuppance. Is there a moral to this story, to Avenatti's story?
I don't know if there's a moral or not, but I do think that there's a nagging question, which is, why did he thrust himself into the public light so aggressively when he had, according to the government, committed some crimes himself that he was risking bringing to light? You know, I mean, a lot of a private person often who has been, you know, less than stellar in paying their taxes can often work it out with the IRS privately, and that's just not known. But in a case like this, you know, you're all but tempting the prosecutors to come after you because you're going to get a lot of public attention if they prosecute you, and you're going to be a kind of vehicle for deterrence for other people who might be tempted to, you know, break the law. So I can't tell you why he did that other than he was really tempted with the opportunity to become a top-tier celebrity lawyer who would make the millions and millions of dollars that he needed to sustain a lifestyle that, by all appearances, he didn't actually have the means to sustain. I mean, among other things that have become public, you know, he, during these years when he was, according to the IRS, skipping out on millions of dollars of taxes and not bothering to file tax returns and whatnot, you know, he bought a private jet you know, albeit one that, you know, you have to refuel to get all the way across the country. But it was still a private jet, you know, and he spent money on, you know, a Ferrari and a Porsche, I mean, six figures at Porsche dealers. And, you know, the oceanfront house was $7 million. And I mean, he's just, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on watches. He had a seriously lavish lifestyle to uphold, and by all appearances, he couldn't. His business, you know, had gone bankrupt, and he hadn't been paying his taxes. And you could see where this celebrity, you know, the possibility of being a big celebrity lawyer would have been tempting. You know, maybe he could afford it after all. But, you know, only he could tell us. I don't know. The interesting thing about writing about someone like Avenatti is the nuance. I think that it can be tempting sometimes for reporters to see, especially when you're in a rush, sort of a one-dimensional, is this a bad guy or is this a good guy kind of thing. And to me, the nuance of all the different things that were going on with him, that's much more interesting. Somebody who is a complicated mix of different things, you know? I mean, he, on the one hand, in some of these cases, like people whose families, loved ones were, their remains weren't handled properly by the owners of a cemetery. You know, he's out there fighting for them. But on the other hand, he's got all kinds of financial shenanigans, it would appear, that don't look too good going on. And it's kind of capturing the motives and the sort of complexities of it. I find that a lot more interesting than just nail someone kind of thing. I don't particularly like that kind of coverage.
Michael, thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us today on American Scandal.
Well, thank you.
That was my conversation with LA Times political reporter Michael Finnegan. You can read more of his reporting on Michael Avenatti in the LA Times or find him on Twitter at FinneganLAT. From Wondery, this is episode 8 of 8 of the Hare Krishna Murders for American Scandal. On the next series, we investigate the underbelly of the music industry, what makes a song a hit, and how much of that success is due to bribery and corruption, or as the record industry calls it, payola. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. This episode was produced by Katie Long. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Marsha Louie, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.